Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret, silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat hand to hand, men who fight by night and day, courage take from the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest, these are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Back at home, a young wife waits. Her Green Beret has met his fate. He has died for those oppressed, leaving her this last request. Put silver wings on my son's chest, make him one of America's best. He'll be a man they'll test one day, have him win.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is J.R. Moore coming to you live from deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks on Friday, the third day of August, year of our Lord, 2018. Welcome to the John Moore Show. Now, the current headline on Drudge has to do with a record number of Americans having employment. That number, official number, is 155,965,000. Sounds like about half the population. That's a good thing. That's a real good thing. Prepper tip of the day. I want to encourage people to inventory books, games, and educational material for children. That would be a good thing. And just do it. Age-appropriate books, age-appropriate games, age-appropriate educational material for children from age 3 to age 18. Okay, this is the hour I look forward to every week where we have a discussion about emergency survival communications. And we have these discussions with my friend Tom Berryhill. Tom is a gentleman who began a quest more than half a century ago to become knowledgeable in ham radio skills and went on from there to become quite knowledgeable in electronics in general, radio frequency engineering, and related items to the point where he's had a career doing those things for not quite half a century. Good morning, Tom.
Hi, John. Good morning. How are you doing today?
Well, real good. Looking forward to a beautiful summer day here in South Central Missouri. How about yourself, sir?
Same here, John. Another sunny day. It's great.
It is. We've got some back to what might be considered normal temperatures for this time of year after having waking up about 4 days ago with 56 degrees for an overnight low. That's highly unusual for the end of July. But nobody was complaining about the cool weather, were they, Tom?
No, they weren't. I thought the air conditioner was on the blink because it wasn't running. So, really nice here.
It was a nice break. Well, Tom, our discussions go in different directions, different weeks, and the group I'm working with, our preparedness group, we're having our monthly business meeting tomorrow. We're going to be making a decision to do a group purchase on some radios. One particular radio, one of our members, he's a paramedic and also a reserve police officer. He's been using and testing this particular model of radio for a full year. And I asked him, I said, are you satisfied that this radio is dependable? He says, yes. Does it have enough volume? Because I know that's something you've mentioned many times, Tom, is some of these low-end radios don't have any volume of any consequence. He says, yes, John, plenty of volume. So we'll be making that decision about 8 a.m. tomorrow morning at our meeting, business meeting, followed at 9 a.m. And at 9 a.m., we're open to the public for a training class on food storage. And we'll be three instructors. Myself, I'll be teaching the part about grain storage. We have another instructor taking the home canning part, and then a third instructor taking care of meat preservation. So we try to cover all our bases there. And it'll be that starts at 9 a.m. at the Quad County Fire District Meeting Room in Viburnum, Missouri. That's V-I-B-U-R-N-U-M. Viburnum, that's a flowering tree I never heard of before. Highway 49, Viburnum, Missouri. If people have any questions, they can give me a telephone call. My telephone number is posted at my website at thelibertyman.com. That class goes from 9 a.m. till noon. There'll be coffee, pastries, and free Bibles for anybody that needs a Bible. Anyway, Tom, I'm looking forward to the meeting. We're not going to give away these radios. We're using the funds from our group, our central funding bank account. And then people who want radios are going to have to buy them. We'll sell them at our cost. We may do a $5 surcharge just to help out with things a little bit financially for the group. But what I found in the past, Tom, if you give away stuff, people won't respect it. They won't take care of it. And that seems to be pretty much human nature, doesn't it, Tom?
Well, as the old saying goes, no skin in the game. They just they don't appreciate it, so they have to have something invested, and then
exactly.
Get some use out of it and appreciate
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yep. You know, I must be one of the exceptions to that rule of thumb, because if I'm given something that I've been seeking, that I want, I will cherish it and take care of it and maintain it and make good use of it. You know, on one hand. On the other, if I get a gift that I didn't want, and my mother's been doing that to me for forever, it sits in a box and never gets opened.
Yeah, that happens too. You get a lot of stuff piled up in the closet.
Yeah, and God bless her. I know she means well, but she did give me one gift that I really did appreciate and use frequently. That's a 24-hour time zone clock. It's a touch screen, and you can touch any time zone on the planet and get what time it is there at local time. And I've made great use of that over the years, since I've had that about 15 years or so, a very handy piece of equipment. When you operate on ham radio, you need to keep in mind the time zones if you're talking international, don't you, Tom?
Oh, that's really true, John, especially on the shortwave bands where you're communicating worldwide. We always went by GMT, or Greenwich Mean Time, sometimes called Zulu time. They split the time zones up by letters. I don't even remember. I think it's 20. Is there 24 time zones? I don't remember.
It's 24 time zones, yeah.
Yeah, and so I believe it was, they'd call it Zeta or Zulu, and that was GMT. And I think right now it's about 7 hours difference.
Is it 7 or is it 5? Maybe from the Midwest it may be 6 or 7.
I get mixed up with it, but because it's so easy to just have one of these clocks like what you have there, and it tells you the time. You don't have to think. It's we've all done that, you know. But I always had two clocks. I had one set for Central Time where I was located, and then I would have one set for GMT.
Right,
of course, the
right.
minutes are the same, but the hours would be different. And that took care of my needs. And that was important if you were keeping logbook entries. See, John, in the old days on ham radio, if you transmitted one Morse code dot or anything. I mean, if you just put one test transmission on the air, you had to enter that in a logbook. I still have my logbook from day one. I don't remember if there was a time period to you had to maintain them for a certain period of several years, maybe. The FCC could come and inspect those if they needed to.
Right. It's a, it's five from the mid from Central Time Zone. It's 5 hours. It's,
okay.
It's 1:09 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, Zulu.
Yeah.
As
and then
we
that'll
speak.
Change as we change with the daylight savings.
Well, of course. Yeah. Absolutely.
Right. In the fall. But anyway, yes, and so we'd always, everybody for the most part would keep their logbooks in GMT. It just made everybody on, be on the same page time-wise, and that helped a lot. So that requirement has been dropped. I don't even believe you need to keep a logbook anymore. I still do. If I transmit, I enter it in there. But in the old days, it was mandatory. So things
right.
have become easier. And anybody thinking about ham radio or considering it should find that it's relatively easy to get in, get started and get involved in it, simpler than ever before. The equipment is, for the most part, plug and play. You buy the equipment, hook up antennas, plug it all together, power it up, it's ready to go. And it's not like the old days where you had to tune transmitters and make adjustments and calibrate frequencies and all that. That's all gone by the wayside.
Right, right. Well, you look at ham equipment from the 50s and 60s, and there was probably six or eight dials to be turned and managed and tweaked, aren't there, and with gauges and lights to tell you what you're doing, right?
Yeah, that's right, because they were tube type, and then the tube amplifiers, you had to do what's called dip the plate when that circuit is tuned to that frequency or resonated on the frequency you're operating on, the plate current would dip to a much lower value, and that's how you adjusted them. And then you increase the loading control, which would couple more power out to the antenna, and you dip the plate again. The two were interacted with each other, so if you adjusted one, you had to adjust the other and keep tweaking those until you get it just right. Then there were intermediate stages. You had to adjust those, and you had different metering functions. You monitored the plate current for the output tube, or tubes, sometimes there were multiple tubes, and then you had to adjust or monitor the grid current. That was important on certain types of transmitters, not always as critical, but it was something you should pay attention to. And in some transmitters I've seen even had meters that you could monitor the, if there was a crystal oscillator, you could monitor the current in that circuit. And I've seen it, John, where you actually had so much current flowing it actually destroyed the crystal, the little crystal that set your
no
frequency.
Kidding.
It, yeah,
really?
Shattered it. I've done it myself.
Mm.
It's been a long time since I've used any crystals. But anyway, in the old days, when you first started out, if you had a novice license, you were restricted to plugging in a crystal to set your transmit frequency. That's how critical things were, and that's how strict the FCC was, because as a beginner, you know, you couldn't be trusted with what's called a VFO or variable frequency oscillator, which would allow you to set your transmitter to any frequency you wanted. You had to use that crystal, and you were restricted to that.
Tom, I got a question for you.
Sure.
Was it mandatory or optional that all your radio equipment be set up in a room that had knotty pine paneling, and you had to smoke Prince Albert tobacco?
Well, I would have been
you know what I'm talking about, right?
I know exactly what you're talking about, because you look at pictures from the old days, and all these ham guys had a den or a radio room. They called it the shack, a radio shack, and that's that would always typically have some sort of paneling, knotty pine paneling or something to that effect. Yes,
and
you're
Prince
right.
Albert and the whole place
oh, yeah.
Prince Albert tobacco, right?
Oh yeah, John, a very dear friend of mine, longtime ham. He was in it long before me, and in the 50s he got on the air, and he always we used to tease him. He had a big pipe, and boy, that thing smelled great. I don't know what type of tobacco he'd smoke, but we'd be working on those radios and tinkering and messing around with these radios in his basement. Did a lot of work with him on equipment. And that's the gentleman, you know him also. And he smoked this pipe. I'll tell you, that pipe smelled great. And I always would kid him about the pipe. It looked like a tree stump, but it was it did. It looked like a tree stump, and it was a massive pipe. But boy, did that thing smell good! And everything in the basin smelled like that pipe.
Of course, but, of course. Yeah. Well, the first ham shack I visited was the father of a young woman I dated, and it was Knotty Pine Paneling and Prince Albert Tobacco, and that was several that I have visited from that time frame, all had the same accoutrements, I guess you could say.
Oh yeah. And if you look at the photos of the old days, these ham radio installations, I mean, it looked like a broadcast studio and broadcast equipment, meters and dials and switches all over the place, versus today where there's the radios have menus. You push a few buttons and a menu pops up on the screen, and then some of the radios actually have touch screens. You just touch it and it switches in the various functions that are required to operate the equipment. So it's changed quite a bit, and a lot of the older guys have trouble with some of these menus. The younger crowd gets into it, and they have no trouble at all. It's like working a cell phone or something like that,
right.
computer, or touchscreen computer. It's very, very similar and very easy to do. And therefore, the FCC relaxed the restrictions, so it's easier than ever to get involved with us. I've said many times on your show that if somebody would just apply themselves a few nights a week for maybe less than a month, I'm going to say 3 weeks, I think they could grasp enough knowledge to pass the technician license and get on the air. And then I've always described that as an apprenticeship. That's where you can get started. You can learn how all of this works, start talking to other people, and advance your knowledge from there and get a higher class license if you'd like, or stay there. That still offers you quite a bit of operating privileges, and that seems to be the most common and license that's out there nowadays. I'd say most of the hams are the technician class, the newer ones, and then they can advance to general or extra class if they wish to, but most people elect to stay with the technician license. If you do want to get on the high frequency bands or the short wave spectrum, you do need to upgrade to a general class at least, and then and that's not that hard to get either anymore. It's like I said, it's really been made a lot simpler, and there's no need for all the technical expertise to get started. You can learn more as you go if you choose to. I think it's an excellent way for younger people to get a very good education in general on communications and electronics, because you're going to be working on a lot of expensive equipment. Some of it's low cost, some of it very expensive, everything, the whole spectrum, from many thousands of dollars down to just a few dollars. You'll be working on this type of equipment, building antennas, learning how they work, how to measure them properly, how to set up antenna couplers and antenna tuners, and the transmitters, receivers. You'll learn everything about it as you go. So it's and it's a fun hobby too. You can talk to people all over the world, and a lot of people, John, don't realize that we do this without any type of infrastructure. So many people have said, I can tell you a funny story. One time we went to a friend of my friend's house, and I'd known him a long time. I believe he had 4 or 5 towers set up. He had a huge ham radio station. He's very well known in ham radio, and we were all standing there. He was showing me his new transceiver, and I think it cost about $10,000. It was a very, very nice piece of equipment, and he had everything you could ever dream of if you were involved in ham radio. And we're standing there looking at all this stuff, and he's telling me about the people he's recently talked to in this part of the world and that part of the world. And my wife says, "Can't you just pick up the phone and call them?"
Right.
And I'm telling you, John, you could have heard a pin drop in that room. And later on, I told her, I said, that's about the worst thing you could have ever said to a ham radio operator with all that equipment and everything. We
that's
had
right.
a good laugh about it, though.
Right. Well, having a sense of humor is a good thing. Here's our break. Call number 800-313-9443.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your...
John, we're back. J.R. Moore here on Friday, the 3rd day of August. My website is thelibertyman.com. My new video, this is the video that was made in Prague, Czech Republic, last July, 2017. This is where I was awarded the Prague Peace Prize. It's a professionally edited video. You will not find this on YouTube. We put in additional things in this professional video, and it's available at the very top left-hand corner of my homepage at thelibertyman.com. It took a while to get this done, but we finally got it done, and now it's ready for shipment. Visiting with Tom Berryhill, we're talking about emergency survival communications, and the call number is 800-313-9443. Well, Tom, I got my technician's license in 1994, and I've never had any desire to get HF because I pretty much have the same attitude. If I want to talk to somebody in London, I just pick up the telephone. I know it's fascinating to people who are fascinated by it, but I just soon use the telephone and talk to somebody in Prague or China or Japan or wherever it might be. But it's a matter of personal preference, isn't it?
Easy and inexpensive nowadays to just pick up a phone and call anywhere in the world. That certainly wasn't the case in the old days, but it really is simple to do that. John, I think the reason for HF communications is for regional coverage. That's where I would put the emphasis. We like to talk about preparedness, and in an event that there was a lack of communication, systems were down, power lines out over a wide area, well, that would offer the absolute best way to communicate, to find out what's going on outside of your local area. Now, of course, you could have repeater systems and just simplex base stations, HTs, mobile units, and talk in your general area. But if you're concerned about what's happening in the next state, or maybe 100 miles away, 200 miles away, the HF systems are the best way to communicate over those ranges. Even with lower power battery-operated radios, you can easily talk several hundred miles during the day and probably internationally at nighttime, and even internationally on the higher frequency bands during the day. But I would think the 40-meter and 80-meter ham radio bands would be the best all-around choice for regional communications on an emergency basis. I would choose the 40-meter band, 7 megahertz band, for daytime communications. And it might interest those listening that I know here in Missouri, I'm sure other states have done similar things, but here in Missouri they do have HF communications as a backup for an all-out bad situation. They do have that in each county. And I can drive by the courthouses, and I always look at the antennas. I can kind of tell what frequency bands are on and so on just from looking at the antennas. And I'll see that sometimes you'll put up a dipole antenna, which is really just a wire antenna, and I know that's for that HF system. So they operate on single sideband. Those systems are licensed between 2 megahertz, and I think the highest one I've seen was 8 megahertz, somewhere up around 8 megahertz. Maybe it was 9. I don't remember. But there are frequencies available for the state agencies to communicate with that. And they're licensed at 1 kilowatt of power, which was amazed me because I don't think they'd ever need that much. But most of the radios that they use, I believe, are around 100 to 125 watts. I did see one installation in St. Louis, and it was a Motorola Micom. Set up for 125 watts with a automatic antenna tuner and a wire type of antenna on the top of the building. It was in downtown St. Louis, so that they are operating that type of equipment, and that gives a really reliable backup in the event their repeater systems and the two-way units and the cars, everything is on the blink. They can still communicate. I think the idea is to get back to headquarters in Jefferson City. So all those agencies have that capability nowadays. And I think the ham should take advantage of that as well. I know most of the hams on the HF frequencies are well-skilled in doing that type of work. So it could be the lifeline for many people.
It could be. I'm reading, there's a story here I've been looking at this morning about Amelia Earhart. Her plane was down in the Pacific Ocean near, I'm not sure what island, but as the tide was coming in, she went back to the plane and fired up the engine to get some power and was broadcasting. And a 15-year-old girl in St. Petersburg, Florida, heard the transmission.
I had heard that story many times, and I think one of her problems, I don't think she knew Morse code. I think her navigator did, but he was deceased or injured and couldn't do the radio. So
she's broadcasting the clear voice transmission. Here's our break. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you. And your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We're continuing our Energy Cleaner promotion, which began August of 2016. In this promotion, you get to buy an Energy Cleaner, $70 off retail, and a mattress pad, 10% off retail. $200 of the purchase price of the Energy Cleaner goes to Republic Broadcasting. This is a great way to help get Energy Cleaners out to people who need them and have some financial issues to deal with. And, of course, a great way to support Republic Broadcasting. Here's what you do. Send in a postcard. My address is John Moore, P.O. Box 201, Davidsville, Missouri. We pick a postcard every 2 weeks. If your postcard is drawn, you get the chance to buy the Energy Cleaner $70 off retail and 10% off the mattress pads. Put your name and your address, your telephone number and your email address on the postcard. And we wish you the best of luck. Thank you.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. J.R. Moore here on Friday, the 3rd day of August. My website is thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com. I'm getting more inquiries. I get two or three inquiries a month. In fact, I'm meeting a couple Sunday or Monday. They're coming from out of state. They'd like to buy real estate in my neighborhood and become my neighbor in my zip code. If that's something you'd like to consider, well, there's contact information at my website to help people find Ozark Realty, find a place in my neighborhood. There's a couple of parcels right now that are available, and we can help people with others as well. Also, my website, of course, you'll find Energy Cleaners for sale. This is my home business. I've got everything in stock, the Energy Cleaners, the mattress pads, the full twin size, full queen king, California king, which I typically don't have in the inventory, and the small travel size as well. If you've got arthritis pain, you're taking over-the-counter products, you're taking prescription products, that's not healthy. Long-term, that's very damaging to your liver and other organs. It's expensive. They don't work. Get yourself an Energy Cleaner. Take care of that arthritis pain in a healthy way. Got joint pain, back pain? Get yourself an Energy Cleaner. It will help. Not getting a great night's sleep, well, as my wife, Dr. Moore, says, when you sleep is when you heal. If you're not getting a good night's sleep, you can't possibly heal. Get yourself an energy cleaner. I use mine every night. I do. I've been using it every night for years. I'm a pretty healthy guy. And if you want to get your health to an optimal level, incorporate the energy cleaner into what you do. Only $285 shipping included. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 90-day money-back guarantee. That's to give you some peace of mind and do something that your medical doctor is highly unlikely to do. Highly unlikely. And that's offer a money-back guarantee on anything that doctor offers. I do take PayPal. You can make your purchase right there at my website, the energy cleaner and the mattress pad using PayPal, MasterCard, Visa. PayPal now takes payments, by the way, if you need to spread out those payments over a few months. You can send me a check or a money order. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. And just to make it as easy as I can, I've got a toll-free order line answered by a very polite young men and women in my hometown, St. Louis. A toll-free order line 24 hours a day. Here it is, 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Visiting with Tom Berryhill, we're talking about emergency survival communications. Got a question or comment, give us a call at 800-313-9443. Well, Tom, I picked up some UPS units, uninterrupted power supplies. I got Tim Spencer a nice big one. I got myself a couple. We're going to retrofit them to run on exterior 12-volt batteries. You and I have been talking about the batteries that you've got in inventory yourself. But when you use an external battery on one of these UPS units, you dramatically increase how long they'll work, don't you, sir?
Yes, that's right. The UPS systems that are sold for computers will operate. I've seen them specifications say 10 minutes to 20 minutes, depending on the model. And then some of the larger ones actually have connections on the back where you can attach additional batteries to increase that runtime. And that's so it's really dependent on what size battery you have. And the UPS systems are a great way to power your ham radio equipment. Of course, they're intended for computers, but you can run other things on them as well, lighting, television sets, things like that. But they're only going to be as good as the amount of batteries that you have. So one of the best ways to do that is to take one of these smaller ones, and you can usually get those at surplus places, and I've seen them at flea markets. Sometimes they give them away because the batteries have gone bad, and they just assume the thing is no good. There's nothing wrong with the unit. It's just that the batteries are shot.
Yeah. The cost of replacement batteries is so close to the new cost retail of a new unit, people just don't mess with them.
Yeah, that really sums it up, John. That's exactly what happens, and they just discard the thing, and they figure, well, a new one will be just fine. But that unit can be repurposed very simply by opening the case, removing the old batteries, recycling them, disposing of them in a environmentally friendly way, of course. And then you bring those wires out that used to connect to the internal batteries. You can punch a hole or drill a hole in the back of the case. Make sure that you put a rubber grommet or something in there to prevent any rough edges from that hole from chewing into that wire. You don't want that to happen, or you'd have...
That could lead to some unwanted excitement involving smoke and flames.
Smoke, flames, sparks. It'd be like a fireworks show, so you don't want that. That's right. And then you bring those wires out. You can extend them a bit if need be and connect up to your larger batteries. And then that unit will operate and run as long as there's enough battery power available. So if you put some larger batteries on there, you could get several deep cycle batteries and connect them in parallel and operate that uninterruptible power supply or UPS system for a long time. I've seen them run for hours and hours by doing a battery setup like that. It's a very, very good way to go.
In parallel, I'll explain in layman's terms what parallel and series means. Parallel, you want the same voltage. So you go negative terminal to negative terminal to negative terminal, and you'll end up with the same voltage as one battery. Series, you go positive, negative, and you add up all the voltages of the batteries to come up with the final number, right, Tom?
That's correct. That's correct.
Yep.
And one more thing, when you make, if you put batteries in series, if you're operating or parallel for that matter, especially when you have multiple batteries, you want to connect one pole, like the positive pole, at one end of that battery string, and then the negative pole would be at the opposite. And that really would be covered if you do the batteries in series, but for a parallel set, you want to connect to the far end, and that way any slight voltage differences between the batteries or voltage drops across the connections, and you will have some, it's very minimal, but you will have some, that will help to equalize that and not cause any trouble. If you connect to the first battery in the string, you could have the batteries at the far end not really supplying their full potential, so it's best to connect the positive on one end and the negative on the opposite end of that string of batteries. And
I hadn't thought about that, Tom, but that makes perfect sense. Yes.
Well, it does, because it'll really show up under high current drain. If you're operating a high power transmitter or a lot of equipment and a UPS or whatever system you have those batteries connected to are operating at maximum power, if you take a voltmeter and measure from the battery terminal itself to the connection that you made, the crimped-on connector, touch that voltmeter there, you'll read a voltage, and that's the voltage drop across that terminal. You want that voltage drop to be as low as possible. It may only be millivolts, but that will actually generate some heat. So if you took a infrared thermometer, you know, those laser dot thermometers, and just point it right at that connection, and you're operating at a high current for a period of time, you monitor that temperature, and you'll see that terminal start heating up. And if the connections aren't real good, you'll get a lot of heat generated there, right, to the point where it will start melting the lead terminal on the battery. I've seen that happen.
I've seen that happen because of accidents, but not because of an incorrect or poor installation or poor connection. But when these things are getting hot, that's a strong indicator that there's something wrong with connection, right, Tom?
That's right. So you want to make sure those connections are bright metal, clean, no corrosion or anything, and clamp them down tight, and then connect if you're operating multiple 12-volt batteries in parallel, where you have a positive to a positive to a positive and so on, connect on to, say, for instance, on the left side of that battery, that bank of batteries, connect your positive on the left and then connect your negative connection at the opposite end on the right. And that way you'll eliminate a lot of those types of troubles. If you connect both positive and negative to the battery on the left and leave the other ones just hanging out there, yeah, they're connected and they're working, but maybe not at peak efficiency.
Okay, well, there's different lubricants, dielectric grease, for example, to use on these connections, which I've been using for years. I started out using half a century ago just plain old Vaseline, which helped. Do you make use of those yourself?
Yeah, I do most of the time. I have made connections, though, and didn't do anything, John. I just made sure they were nice and tight. And then I always I do test them occasionally with a millivolt meter, and I look for that voltage drop across the terminal. And you can also use the thermometer, the infrared thermometer. That helps too. But just looking for that voltage drop will save you a lot of trouble. If you measure under high current loads a voltage drop of a volt or some, or even a half a volt, that's a bad connection. It should never be that high of a voltage drop. You need to really pay attention to that. So that's a good way to test out your installation, is just monitoring or checking and testing for the voltage drop across the terminal, the battery terminal itself, and the connection you've made to it. And you want the lowest voltage possible there.
Well, same thing applies to your automobile battery, and that's something almost all of us deal with, is automobile and truck batteries. And as I wrote in my book that was published 30 years ago, the reasons cars don't start right today is the same reason they didn't start in 1935. Most of the time it's a bad battery connection or a bad battery, right, Tom?
Yeah, that's correct. And, of course, in the old days, the batteries were 6 volts. Anytime you – the lower the voltage, the higher the current. So it's high current situations that will cause these types of problems. You know, John, on the larger UPS systems that were that we've talked about, they actually operate at much higher voltages. I have a UPS system here that operates, I think it's 156 volts. It has 13 batteries, and it operates at the higher voltage because the wiring can be smaller, and now it takes a larger string of batteries, but you get the same power density. You have the high ampere hour batteries, and they're all connected in series, and that will power that thing for many hours of use. So the larger ones will use higher voltages, and they'll connect all those batteries in series. You have to really pay attention to those connections and those types of systems. You don't want any voltage drop at all. So a lot of the intermediate size units, the larger ones, like I said, will operate at much higher voltages, and some even higher than the one I have here. But others will operate at 24 and 48 volts. And that seems to be pretty common, 24 being very common when you start getting into the larger units. And then I have a 6 kilowatt unit here that operates at 48 volts. So that would take 4 12-volt batteries to power that, and they'd be in series. And you'd certainly want to make sure that your connections are nice and tight. Any voltage drop across any of those connections is going to generate quite a bit of heat and will really cut down on the efficiency of your system.
Well, these are all things that ham radio guys and gals listening to us, they know exactly what we're talking about. Men and women who have dealt with electrical matters may know most of what we're talking about. But there's a large percentage of our listening audience that we may as well be speaking Latin here, Tom. They don't have a clue what we're talking about. And if you don't have a clue, and I know that there's nothing wrong with that. You can't know everything. You're not born knowing this stuff. This is your heads up. This is basic stuff, basic knowledge you need to know to use this kind of equipment and many other kinds of equipment, by the way. There's lots of things in our world that use electricity. All the more reason to become part of your local ham radio club, to go ahead and get your ham radio license, start working with the experienced ham radio guys and gals, and build up your base of knowledge, build up your skill sets, acquire the tools and diagnostic tools that you need, and so you can, at some point, have this knowledge and be working independently on your own, and maybe at some future date, several years in the future, you can be a mentor to a newbie coming on board yourself, can't they, Tom?
That's right, John, and none of us know everything about everything. So there's always somebody that knows more than you, and they can share that information. I always encourage anybody that's interested in ham radio to take along some younger people. The young kids, they really pick up on this quick, and I've seen them come up to speed so fast it would just really surprise you. And they get an education in electronics and communications that you could get in no other way. I don't think there's a better way to learn about things like that. And so you take the younger people, the school-age kids along, and they may get interested in this, and they find it fascinating. So many people think that there's a huge infrastructure behind us, but there's not, John. It's the ham radio guy and his transmitter talking to a man or woman on the other side of the world with their transmitter and their power supply. It could be battery operated. If it's battery operated on each end, I mean, there is no connection to any grid of any type, and that communications is from one unit to the other unit, and that those signals go through the air and and bounce off the ionosphere and come back down to Earth and bounce up again. They go back and forth with several bounces, and then the communications is established. There's no cell phone towers. There's none of that. It can be something as simple as a wire strung up through a tree on each end to some not necessarily high power equipment either. I've made many contacts internationally using just 2 watts of power. It is done. It's a little bit harder to do that way. But even with 2 watts of power, John, you can talk on the HF frequencies. You can talk statewide with that. It can be done, and I've done it many times. So I focus on regional. I'm very interested in the preparedness side of communications, and I think really everybody should pay attention to that and consider getting some HF equipment so that they can be prepared in the event of a total outage and keep in touch.
Well, the group I work with, we have a communications equipment that is equivalent to what's used in CIA field stations, things that we've got at in industrial auctions, really high-end, sophisticated, powerful equipment that was used by the federal government. You can do this yourself. Now, before you start making any purchases, you know, for example, you get involved with ham radio, you're going to want to acquire tools and test equipment. Don't just start willy-nilly buying things. See what the other guys and gals have done, the kits that they've put together. I have dedicated tool kits myself that have nothing but the equipment I need to work on radio and electronics. So it's kept segregated, not mixed together with automotive or mechanical or carpenter or plumber's tools. A nice size toolbox will hold pretty much everything you need. You're going to want parts boxes with these segmented parts for your different connectors and things. Otherwise, you end up with a big mess, right, Tom?
You do end up with a big mess, and I've been guilty of that myself, John. You really do need to segregate those tools, have separate drawers, have maybe a roll-around toolbox or several toolboxes, depending on how involved you get in this type of work. But you'll need test equipment and tools. I think at a minimum, everybody should have at least a digital voltmeter. I like the digital units, but I also use analog. I use a Simpson 260 volt, which is a very popular voltmeter, and I use that most of the time because I'm just so familiar with it. And it's an analog, but it's a really, really good unit, and it's simple to operate and very reliable. They've been in production with those meters for, 50 or 60 years, maybe longer. They've been around for a while, and it's a time-proven type of piece of equipment. So pick up something like that, and if you get, you might want to then advance to an oscilloscope. If you're going to do any testing or work, you might want to get an oscilloscope. They've become very inexpensive in recent years. But you can buy the older Tektronix types of oscilloscopes. They're still very useful, and I have several different oscilloscopes that I use. Mainly, I use them for development work on products and projects and things like that. But they're really helpful for diagnostic work. And if you like to work on cars, an oscilloscope can be very handy for that. It'll see little glitches and voltage pulses and things that are causing interference or trouble with systems. You can really use those as a great diagnostic tool. So an oscilloscope's a good thing to have. And, of course, you need some soldering equipment. I would think everybody would want to get a good high-power soldering iron for doing
that. Don't get the discount one at Harbor Freight. Get a good one, a good quality one.
Right, and you need a soldering station. I like those the best. They're temperature controlled, and they've become very inexpensive. There's some import models that are fantastic, and you're talking maybe $40 or $50. You can get a pretty good setup. The tips are replaceable. They have all different size tips, and you can turn the temperature up or down as needed. But you do need a soldering gun or a very large soldering iron. I'd say 250 or 300 watts if you're going to do big antenna connections and things like that. If you're building your own antennas, putting on the connections on the coaxial cable, you want a large soldering iron or soldering gun. A soldering gun is pretty handy, and that will do the job. And they're good also if you're doing your UPS systems, connecting up battery power supplies. You may want to solder, crimp those connections, but some people also like to solder them.
Our next ham radio class that we do, Tom, I think we need to practice doing coax connections. That's something that's always been a difficult thing for me to do. I've never really got proper training in it. But doing the coax, where you connect the coax to the connectors, is a valuable, not optional skill, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And probably the most popular one would be called a PL259, and that just and there's adapters that screw into the rear end of that thing that allows you to use smaller, so the RG58 size cables,
right?
And then the RG8X, there's a larger adapter for that. And then if you're using RG8 type, those size cables, they go directly into that connection. And then you solder the center pin. And then the hardest part, John, this is where everybody has trouble, is soldering the braid or the shield part of the coax cable,
right.
Soldering that into that connector. That is where you need a very high power iron. If you don't have enough power, what happens is you heat up that connector so much, just trying to get enough heat to melt the solder and get it down. There's four holes around the circumference of that connection that have to be soldered, and you end up melting the insulation. You could possibly short the thing out. So a very high-power iron many times is safer and better than a low-powered iron. So many people think that just a little bit of heat is better than a whole lot. I'd rather have a lot of heat for a short period of time and then get
away
from
that's kind of thing where we need hands-on instruction where people actually do this as opposed to reading in a book or watching a video.
Right, John, and at a class like that, I could bring the right type of equipment and demonstrate it and then let people try it out for themselves.
That's exactly what we need to do. We're almost at the top of the hour here, Tom, and it's been a fast hour, to say the least, and it's good to get this information out to people, to encourage them to look into the hobby of ham radio. And we pick up a person here and there. You know, it's not like they're beating down the doors to become ham radio operators, but a few here and there is a worthwhile goal, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And like you said, they're not beating down the doors to become ham operators because everybody can just pick up that cell phone and communicate worldwide instantly. That's great, but just let that system go down. Let that infrastructure fail, and I think you'd have a lot of renewed interest in ham radio.
Well, by then it'd be too late. So
that's true.
For most people, most of the time. Well, Tom, thank you, sir. I don't want to be cut off by the music. Let's talk privately soon, okay?
Okay, John. Thank
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate it. Thank you, sir. We do a top-of-the-hour break. Coming up, we'll have open lines the second hour. Dr. Phil has the day off today. And we'll have open lines and get into some interesting discussion. Yeah, when I got involved with ham radio, I went out and I bought everything I needed, the tool kits, all the connectors, the specialized tools, and that's been, 24 years ago, and it's been a good investment. It really has been. Here's our break. Stay tuned. Okay.
Accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited. So take a breath, head to aroutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at aroutfitting.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.